wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora, Davide. How are you?
Kia ora, Millie. Hi, Josh. Hello. I'm good.
Hello.
Oh, good.
Having a good...
sunny again.
I know. It feels like summer out there today. It's so hot.
Yeah.
Global
warming.
More to come,
hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. True. El Nino pattern, isn't it, this year?
Yeah. It's amazing. Changing again.
Woohoo. All right, you've got a really interesting one up first about snails.
Yes, it's a story which is as funny as it is interesting, and it's about snails. And I must admit, this is not like the most recent story, scientific story out there, but it caught my attention so much that I thought, okay, I have to bring it to Dear Science.
Pretty crazy.
So this is a study that comes from the University of California, UCLA, and it's about snails, and it's about the concept of memory. So can we transfer memory across individuals? And that's what they have studied eventually. And what they have done with snails is, first of all, they have chosen snails because apparently snails, the organization of the nervous systems in snails is very similar, for as similar as it can be, to the nervous systems organization of humans. So there are some similarities out there, even
what?
If you wouldn't
so
think
we're like
so.
Snails.
I mean, some people are slower, but...
that's true.
The thing is that what they've done, they have electrically stimulated the snails with a mild electric shock, and they have measured the response of the snails in terms of like muscle contraction upon the stimulus that they have given in terms of electrical stimulus. And they have measured that snails, on average, they respond with a contraction that is roughly 50 seconds long, right? So these were the snails that were electrically stimulated. Then they have trained the snails to basically respond to this electrical stimulus. What they then did, there was something very interesting. So they took out of the snails something called RNA. And it was RNA that is associated to particular basically phenomena, cellular phenomena that were related to this training, to this electrical training. So
love RNA.
Yeah. So and they basically re-injected now the same RNA that they took from snails that were electrically stimulated to contract their muscles into snails that were never trained.
Wow.
And of course, I mean, they also had a control. And what they saw is that the snails that were never trained, but had the RNA injected from the other snails that were trained, and again, the memory, right, that comes back, were able to contract for 40 seconds without being trained.
That's insane. Oh my gosh. So snails can learn things
via molecules injected to them, so can remember, let's say, the mild electroshock that they get from a different control group. But effectively, this has got great implications because there are several theories behind memory, and one of these theories is that memory has to be, let's say, engraved somehow into somebody's organs, let's say, in this case, the brain or the nervous system. And there are several theories. One of the theories says that the connection between neurons, they become thicker as you develop some memory or some source of memory. And some others say, no, it's just like modifications in the DNA that are transcribed then to the RNA. And then eventually, if we transfer that molecule, then the memory gets transferred too. And this group of researchers actually exploited that angle. And they basically saw that it's possible to transfer memory just transferring molecules across organisms, at least in this very simple case, of course.
That is insane, though.
Yeah. It's,
it'd be so interesting if you could get, like, muscle memory injected into you.
That would be awesome. We are a little bit far away from that, but but the point is, it seems this research seems to suggest that memory may not be only a long-term potentiation event in which you have to develop it over long periods of time. You can have like chemical modification to the DNA that can translate almost immediately into another organism just if you get that effect in the shape of a molecule, in this case RNA.
That's blown my mind. It really has. And then we've got switching molecules on and off. Another kind of biological manipulation story.
Yes, we are talking about molecular transistors, effectively, and these molecular transistors being proteins in this case. So, I mean, the biology of proteins start with the understanding that protein structure is very important to protein function. That's what we learn from the biology books. And effectively, people have seen that structure is super important, right? However, it's not the full story. Proteins have to be dynamic in order to work. So they have to carry together with their structure a certain degree of dynamic in solution. Mm-hmm. So they are moving entities, let's say. And of course, I mean, now there is an AI model that is termed AlphaFold that can effectively fold, that can obtain structure or can propose a structure, a viable structure for every protein sequence that is out there virtually.
Wow! Yeah,
this has been an amazing advancement, one of the most important advancement of structural biology, because technically we can look at each protein, what is the shape of each protein, just by modeling it via AI. Of course, what is missing is the dynamic part. The dynamic part is missing because AlphaFold could not really predict how the protein moves, just what they look like in a static structure. It's just like I take a picture of you, but I don't know how you're moving, right?
True.
So what this group of researchers at the University of Washington, Washington State University, did was actually engineering some proteins so to make them switch between two conformational state, between two conformations, two shapes. And they basically had a zero state and a one state, exactly like transistors, and they could transit between zero and one on command. So you would actually inject another molecule, and this molecule would bind the transistor, and the transistor would go from a zero state to a one state, just by engineering a hinge between two, let's say, stiff a flexible linker between two stiff bits.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's got a very, very important implications, because you can control cellular events, right? If you can have proteins that you can engineering to respond to a stimulus, you can then tell the protein, okay, I want you on or I want you off, and these can actually trigger other cellular events.
That is amazing. So we can play with cellular events now.
Yes, and protein design is a very, very rapidly growing and evolving field, and these hinge-like structures are a significant achievement in the field of switchable proteins, let's say. And of course, I mean, this is not only true for cellular control, but it's also true for materials or responsive materials, right? Materials that can respond, biomaterials that can respond to a stimulus, let's say.
Oh, that's just incredible that we can manipulate. It sounds like fiddly work, though.
Yes, we are starting to understand the rules. For proteins, it's more difficult than nucleic acids, because nucleic acids play by the rules much, much more.
I wonder how many mistakes they've made.
Yeah, it's sort of a learning from mistakes, in a way.
And then we've got a computer that can run off light.
Yes, computers, right? We cannot live without them, but and sometimes we feel that they are taking over. But computers and the development of computers is actually under stress. I don't know if you ever heard of something called the Moore's Law.
Yes, I have.
Right. So predicting that the amount of, transistors, in this case real transistors, not proteins, fitted on a circuit will double approximately every couple of years. The problem is that the physical space that is available on a circuit is limited, so we cannot fit more transistors.
No.
So the development of boards like circuits is actually slowing down. We will reach a point in which no matter how many transistors you can fit, there is not enough physical space, because the lithography is actually limited, right? What happens is that we have to find new frameworks, new paradigms, and researchers at MIT have thought that instead of using electricity, which is what transistors use now, we can use a mix of electricity and light.
Right. Yay! Photons!
Photons, exactly. So computers work with electrons at this stage, right? They travel through and they activate or deactivate something via current flows. Now, what about if we affiliate light to the electron paradigm, right? A photon paradigm to the electron paradigm. And that's exactly what they have done. So they have like a CPU, and they have what is so-called the smart network interface card, which works with photon stimuli. So work with light stimuli. And the advantages are that it's much, much faster because photon are speed of light.
Speedy.
Yeah, they are massless, and they can travel much, much faster than electrons. And the problem, the limitations, however, were that you cannot really store information, right, with photons.
Right,
very
no,
much.
You can't.
So you cannot do this like, for example, you would do with electrons, right? So you can have very, very fast computations. Let's say that you want to solve like numerical exercises, matrix calculations, it's super fast, but you cannot store, right?
Right.
For the storing, you have to talk to the electrons. And what these researchers have done, they have exactly developed this, a cross-talk interface between photons and electrons, so I mean the light computing part and the more traditional electron computing part, and now they can communicate, and they have shown that they can effectively speed up computations without really integrating more transistors into computing cards, let's say.
We've done it.
The computing systems, yeah. it's very promising, let's say.
That is really promising. So do you think we'll see that bleed into the majority of our computers?
Eventually, yes. I mean, the paper, actually, I read the paper, and the paper was not only theoretical. They have actually developed the hardware that can do this.
I want to see it.
Mm-hmm. It is very... you know, possible that this will result in the short term into more and more, smart NICs, they call it, network interface cards that can use photons, the photon devices, right, devices that trigger certain wavelength in order to solve some computations, right? They can end up in our everyday computers and much earlier than the so-called quantum computing that everybody is after these days, right?
Just incredible stuff. Well, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, David, for having me.
And thank you, Science. Thank you, MoTeT. That's it for Dear Science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science. Thanks to MoTeT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.